From the creators and editors of the My Big Jesus blog, it's the My Big Jesus podcast. Now, broadcasting semi-live from a doomsday prepper's hidden bunker just to the right of Middle America.
It's the week of August 3rd, 2014, and this is the My Big Jesus podcast, where we look at the work of Jesus and how it collides with our culture and life. Today, our hosts are Gene Francis, lead singer of the band Fury in the Sound, Chris Lawson, editor of the My Big Jesus blog, and me, Ryan Corbello. I'm here because I registered to win a tractor at a flea market, and this was second prize. As this is our premiere episode, Chris, tell us what we're doing here.
Thanks, Ryan. Well, this podcast is being launched in conjunction with the My Big Jesus blog found at, you guessed it, mybigjesus.com. The blog was launched with this tagline: your Jesus is too small. So here's the deal. The idea that Jesus is king has cosmic implications for the way those who follow him see the world. Jesus not only wants to reconcile all people who were created in his image to himself, but he also is at work in and through his image bearers, reconciling all things to himself. So each day, the blog will feature 2 to 3 posts that will illustrate the ways Jesus redeems both people and culture. One example might be justice. So the My Big Jesus blog is going to have regular posts about the issues of justice in the world. We believe that faith communities that faithfully follow the work of Jesus should care about justice, making sure that God's purposes of justice and mercy are worked out in the world. And so you'll regularly see posts about that topic. There'll be other posts that focus on film and parenting and marriage and arts and mercy efforts and education and intellectual and academic efforts, finances, vocation, Christian identity, friendship and hobbies, a whole variety of things. We'll be talking about the way that Jesus is king over all of the spheres of our life and culture. And so this podcast is a product of the larger work that's being done on the blog. Simply put, we're going to come together regularly here and talk with each other and with our contributors and with other great writers about how what we believe about Jesus collides with our lives and culture. So people should subscribe to the podcast and check the blog each day for new content.
We're also here with Gene Francis. Gene, how much longer are we going to have to wait before your album drops?
That's a great question, Ryan. I think it's going to be sometime towards the end of the summer, early fall, but we've got a great record. It's called Things We Understand. It's a, just kind of a melodic rock and roll album, keeping things simple with songs that'll get stuck in your head. But you can hear a little bit of it on this podcast, on the beginning and the middle and the end of it.
That's right.
They will get stuck in your head. I can test that.
Fury in the Sound is the official house band of the My Big Jesus blog.
And as our listeners get to know us, I'm going to make sure you guys are keeping current on current events. So I've developed a current events quiz. Some of these actually go back a few months.
I'm pretty nervous about this because I've been living under a rock for the last like 2 or 3 months. Four months, really.
Gene just had a new baby. Gene's wife just had a new baby. Yeah.
Most of these stories are actually kind of like second page of the news. So, I mean, these aren't headlines. I designed it to be relatively easy. I think you should, there's 5 questions here. I think you should go 3 or 4 out of 5 here. How are we doing this? Is it a competition?
Sure.
Y'all going to raise your hands and I'll call on you?
I don't raise my hand. I just scream.
I'll beep. Beep. That's when I'm saying I want to answer.
Make an animal noise. How about that? No. Okay. Here we go. Question number 1. An unretouched recording session of this artist was released in July, fueling speculation that
Britney Spears
can't
Alien
really sing.
Boom.
If I just sat here by myself for the rest of the day, I never got it.
I've listened to it like twice.
Oh my gosh, it is so bad that it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And actually, I think it's kind of wonderful that we live in a place, in a time where you can be a professional at something that you're not even
a little bit good at.
My favorite thing is that the Gene sang on the podcast. Gene sings better than that. So please.
No, that was it. That's untouched.
Unedited. Untouched.
I'm also a little bit embarrassed that I said I've been living under the rock for the last 4 months. But the one thing I knew about was
Britney Spears news.
But then admitted that you listened to it more than once.
Yes, I've heard it several times.
Awesome. All right. Question number 2. This is 1-0, Francis. All right.
I need some questions that aren't about music.
Right. All right. Question number 2. In June, a tracking device washed up on the shore, causing some to speculate that something ate the 9-foot this that it was attached to. Neither of you know it.
No.
Tracking device washes up on the shore. You know it's got to be a...
What, this monster?
A bottle.
Great white shark.
A great white shark.
There's a 9-foot great white shark and something ate it. All right, so here's the sequence of events. So the tracking device abruptly dives down 1,900 feet, and the ambient temperature of the device increased from 46 degrees to 78 degrees. So it was inside of something, they think. What ate a 9-foot great white shark?
Oh, it was the tracker was in the great white.
It was on the great white.
And something ate it.
Something ate it.
It's the megalodon. Have y'all watched?
Yeah.
The answers are always on the Sci-Fi Network, guys. What are you talking about? Listen, it's like Men in Black, where the National Enquirer is actually their source of news. That's how they found out where aliens go to investigate. Same thing. The Sci-Fi Network is how we find out the megalodon.
Right.
Come on, there's no question.
All right, question number three. After much deliberation on July 11th, LeBron James revealed that he had decided to leave the Miami Heat for this team.
Cleveland Cavaliers. Gene wouldn't know
he
that.
He got me.
So for all of our listeners out there, Gene knows nothing about sports.
I thought he was going to play for the Braves, but he ended up going to play for
in a surprise move, he decided not to play baseball.
And, Chris knows nothing about music.
Right. So Cleveland Cavaliers, it's a 2-year contract worth $42.1 million, but he can leave after 1 year. Tell me what happens, Chris, in the city of Cleveland if he leaves after 1 year.
Oh, this last time they set his jersey on fire. This time, I think they set the whole city on fire. It's like, you know, pre-19th century Detroit again.
did you read the Sports Illustrated essay where he finally gave his answer of what he was going to do?
Yeah, where he talked on the phone with the dude and the dude wrote the letter and gave LeBron credit for it? Yeah, I saw that.
But I thought it was actually pretty moving, the essay.
Yeah, if he'd have written it, I'd been more impressed.
It was like about letting go of grudges and you'd forget about it.
Listen, if somebody pays me $42 million, I'll be friends with anybody.
Right. Yeah, I can't hold a grudge that's worth more than $42 million.
And I'm pretty sure LeBron James has reason to write pieces about letting go of grudges. Because I don't know anything about him other than that whole cities of people hate his guts.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, look, I'm letting go of my grudge. Guys. Right. Yeah. So y'all really should follow suit here.
Right.
All right. Question number four.
Look how generous I am. Right. I'm coming back for $42
right.
million.
Yeah. You're welcome. All right. On to question four. On June 26th, FIFA fined and banned Luis Suarez for 9 matches for doing this in the Uruguay versus Italy World Cup match.
Gino, you know this one.
I should have known. No, I just read it.
I thought you guys were going to go 5 for 5.
He bit the guy in the shoulder.
Yeah.
That's right. I knew it was some sort of biting, but I couldn't remember what
article. Missing 9 games. Listen, Gene, you know soccer.
I do mostly, but when it wasn't on primetime Fox, I didn't see it because I don't have ESPN.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Unless I stole a buddy's HBO Go and logged in and watched it.
Does anyone actually have an HBO Go account? No. I feel like every single one is borrowed.
I stole my buddy's, and for some reason it also worked on ESPN Live or whatever that app is called.
Did y'all see that the weekend update on Saturday Night Live where the girl from Russia says that she doesn't have television, but she says, but I have HBO Go, because doesn't everyone?
Yeah. Yeah, so Luis Suarez bit a guy and then fell down. This is his third incident biting someone. And, you know, like most Americans, I didn't watch soccer until the World Cup.
No, and now we are experts.
Right, exactly. And so I started watching that. I just assumed this guy was just terrible, because the guy on the field biting someone it's got to be terrible.
No, it turns out he's like the third best player in the world.
Yeah, he's fantastic, and he's a biter.
He has this in common with my 4-year-old.
Yeah.
Who bit a brother in the back.
He was fined 100,000 Swiss francs.
So $25. Not to jump into any real content, but what is it about guys at the top of their game that think they can get away with stuff like that? Like
Mike Tyson syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah, but even in the soccer world, Zinedine Zidane, I don't remember how.
Dropping names over there.
He, world caliber player, played for France. Fingers crossed. I literally can't remember anything. But he headbutted a dude in the sternum and like cracked his sternum and was red carded. It was a whole deal. But he was at one point in time the best player in the world. And so we've got these guys that have these huge
egos
that are biting and headbutting people.
I'm just impressed that you can break someone's chest with your head.
Right.
I mean, I think that's worth a point. Yeah, did you see the meme, the Apple logo? Said Suarez was here.
That's cheap.
All right, question number five. Ooh, I've got six questions. I didn't realize that. All right, question number five. Courtney Cox smashed hopes of a reunion of this show after a
tour. Friends. Joey.
I think that
Jesus.
That might be a tie, actually. Yeah, and so I'll
concede to Chris, because Chris, I enjoy the show Friends, but Chris
loves it. If you beat him on this question,
yeah, so,
he would never forget.
So,
you.
Yeah, I think if we review the tape, his F came out slightly quicker than mine.
Fair enough. I'm relieved just because it would have been 30 minutes of we were on a break jokes.
Right.
I love that show. We're going to talk about that show again later in the episode, I promise. Right.
So, final question. This is my favorite question of our now six-question quiz. Authorities are on the lookout for a couple who allegedly stole a 14-inch this from the North Carolina Museum of History in Raleigh, valued at over $10,000.
Dinosaur bones.
Not far off. We'll go to...
Arrowhead.
No. All right, so now, both of you are wrong. It's a duck-billed dinosaur made out of resin, and it's worth $10,000.
It's not even real?
No, it's a real dinosaur.
But it's made out of resin? Hold on, dinosaurs are made out of resin?
Yeah, and apparently worth $10,000. We need to get into the duck-billed dinosaur making business, y'all.
How much is a real one worth? Wait, you're joking. It's not real. I mean, it can't be made out of resin.
The dinosaur.
You assume too much.
Real.
I don't know what dinosaurs are made out of. Just because you're in med school doesn't mean that everybody knows what bone is made out of.
They're made out of
Jesus. It's got milk in it. I know it's got milk in it.
I'm reading from the News Observer now. According to State Capitol Police, the couple on Monday stripped the North Carolina Museum of History of model corn, cabbage, lettuce.
Wait, was the cabbage and lettuce model as well, or was it real?
Okay. Along with an actual antique medicine bottle and some non-historical doilies.
I wonder if they're disappointed.
I appreciate the distinction.
Does anybody else really want to know what part two of his heist plan is?
No.
Like, what are you just like setting up the world's saddest exhibit in your living room?
I would like to know who reported.
I'm pretty sure this is my grandma's living room.
Doilies in it. No, who reported though? Like, okay, and they stole a dinosaur. It was fake, and then they stole some cabbage and fake corn. And some doilies.
Right.
They're not historical.
But they're not historical.
They just took it right out of our kitchen.
Those were handmade, I'll bet, by the same woman that reported it.
All right, what's our final score here? I don't remember. I feel like we all lost.
Here's the deal. Chris always wins. That's all you need to know.
All right, so a Pyrrhic victory here to Chris Lawson then.
So, Ryan, that last question got me thinking about this this kind of news of the weird piece that I saw this week about a guy who stole someone's cell phone. He took it away. They were looking for it. They turned on all of their LoJack stuff to kind of track it down. The way the police found him was that he took a selfie and sent it to his girlfriend. And so they were able to figure out that where the phone was and figure out who had taken the phone because he left a picture of himself
on the phone.
So over the weekend, I love dumb criminals. So
if he's smart.
Yeah, that's true. He wouldn't be a criminal. But if you have great stories from dumb criminals, send them to chris@mybigjesus.com and we'll share them on the air here. Gene, what you got? What kind of story you read this week that's been fantastic?
Yeah, I read a New York Times piece about a guy who just recently, he was 48 years old, and he just got arrested. He was caught on the subway picking pockets, but he's a lifelong pickpocketer. He's been pickpocketed.
What college did you go to for that?
From I don't recall. The School of Hard Knocks.
No, or the sorry. University of Texas.
Yeah, or UT. But I found it fascinating reading the story. There wasn't anything too overwhelmingly weird about it, other than that there was a gentleman who was near 50 that lived his whole livelihood was picking pockets. And then
pocket picking.
Right. I don't know. What do you pull down as a pocket picker?
I don't know.
I think pants.
Right. Okay, yeah, pull down pants. But when I kept reading the article, though, new trainees that are plainclothes police officers that ride the New York City transit, the subway and stuff, an officer developed a stack of 50 cards, the nifty 50 of the top 50 pickpocketers in New York City. And this is a current thing that these guys go through these flashcards trying to memorize these faces so that if they see them on the subway, they can pick them up. But to me, that's just such a foreign concept for me.
What?
Pickpocketing?
You think it'd be quite good after a 50-year career.
Right.
Like, you just look at a guy and get his wallet.
Yeah. That was one of the things that they were so surprised that they actually caught him. But interesting stuff.
We're going to link to these and all the other stories that we talked about on the My Big Jesus blog. Check it out.
So one of the things we want to do each time we gather here is we want to talk about the ways that we see issues in the world that we don't believe are being adequately addressed by faith communities. And so Ryan and Gene are here, and we want to talk a little bit about the fact that one of our bloggers just returned from Africa, where sex trafficking is an enormous issue. But that said, I've been reading over the last several months about how sex trafficking is an enormous issue in America. And I have to be honest, guys, most of my life I've seen sex trafficking as a third world or even a second world issue.
Yeah.
But now it really is one of the growing problems in our world. And so I thought we might talk a little bit about it. Gene, I know you're particularly passionate about this issue, but there was a article recently in the Washington Post, and we'll put this up on the blog, talking about that for most of history, Asia and the South Pacific and Pacific regions have been kind of the primary area that sex trafficking has been really growing. But now United States is one of the fastest areas in the world. So, Gene, what are your thoughts about sex trafficking and how we should be talking about it?
Well, I guess it just really, kind of like what you were saying, became real when I read an article also in the Huffington Post about how the Super Bowl is the single largest human trafficking incident.
I heard about that.
And to think about the fact that, you know, the hustle and bustle in a city that's already overwhelmed by a sporting event that hosts, you know, live 100,000 people at the arena, but what sort of boost do they have? A million extra people in town that day, just because,
know.
You know, I mean, I don't know the numbers on that, but so underneath that hustle and bustle is when a lot of the, just some of the darkest thing that you can imagine are all just kind of happening right under our own noses on a pretty exciting, happy day. But I think that that's kind of showing us how dangerous this has become. The fact that what they can guess to be the single largest event in sex trafficking history happened at the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happening right under our noses while we're out just tossing the football on a Saturday afternoon.
That was in New York City. Yeah, that article actually that I was alluding to was from the Wall Street Journal. And it talked about the fact that the FBI's had to create an entire department that this is their job, is to create stings in the United States to stop human trafficking. So,
right. So these people that are being trafficked, I'm sure most people know the story and can kind of read between the lines, but are these people being trafficked exclusively as prostitutes, as sex slaves, in other words?
Or? Almost exclusively in America, they're underage sex slaves, yeah.
Okay. And now, you say almost exclusively, I've read something, I think, in that same article about it being, there's some slaves for labor, even.
Yes.
That's still a thing that exists.
Yeah, we're going to talk at some point together about immigration. Today's just not the day. But yeah, when you can't find cheap labor, you'll buy cheap labor. I mean, it's really... As a country, we don't have appropriate responses to these kinds of crises. Our response is, hey, let's watch the Super Bowl, even though it's propagating this enormous problem of sex trafficking in our largest city. It's really sad.
So what's this? I mean, how do they get away with this? Like, what's the usual narrative of one of these people who's trafficked?
You know, the thing that kind of brought it to light was the New Yorker ran a long piece on July the 10th about how to get those Nigerian schoolgirls back. And if y'all remember that whole piece and
the hashtag bring back our girls,
bring back our girls, and about how that the Boko Haram had gone in and taken those girls and then sold them into slavery for $12 a piece. And almost exclusively, it was sex slavery. And so the New Yorker really explored that issue. And then in that, they linked off a bunch of other pieces about how do we talk about this and how do people get away with it in our culture? And the truth is there's just not enough manpower. I mean, when, for instance, let's talk about the city of Chicago that's having these enormous issues with gang violence and gun violence and how many people are dying on weekends there. Well, it's the tyranny of the urgent, right? You have to deal with the seen crime more than the unseen crime.
Right.
And it's really sad. It's really a sad thing. So my larger question for y'all guys is, you both are committed to God's work in the local church at different places.
how should the church be talking to our people about this, and how can we help our people think about ways to care for this issue?
Well, I think, you know, maybe a first response is in the church for us to be able to speak more openly about topics like this.
Right.
We can't talk about sex, anything really, in the church. It's gotten a little bit better in the last 5 or 10 years, but I grew up, I'm a pastor's kid. I grew up and we didn't talk about that, just period, good or bad. And so here we are in a culture, especially in our Christian communities, where that topic, whether it's sex inside or outside of marriage, sex trafficking, pornography, whatever, these are real issues that are plaguing our country and plaguing our people that are in our congregations, but we have a really hard time even bringing it up.
Right. I think you're exactly right. That attitude is kind of melting, though, that over the last 5 or 10 years, that it's been more and it's been increasingly acceptable to talk about it. And I think you're absolutely right that it needs to be an ongoing dialogue.
And in the evangelical community, people like Louis Giglio get a lot of credit for bringing this to the forefront, right? So tens of thousands of college kids will go to these Passions conferences, and then he and his wife started a whole enditmovement.com, right? Enditmovement.com, where they're talking about this and getting kids to raise, I think 2 years ago, Gene, you helped me on this, but $3 million or more raised.
Yeah.
And then the government set up sites, and then there are other nonprofits. Like, there's a really good site called notforsale.org. Where they talk about this issue. And I think, you know, I hate to boil everything down to awareness, right? I mean, you hate to say, well, if people just knew about it, because there are lots of things that people know about and don't care, right? Like, kids are starving in our country.
Right.
This is an issue I think people just don't realize. I mean, even myself, a little naive and think this is a third world problem. What can I do? But the truth is that in my town of 300,000, it's probably happening three blocks from where I work.
Right. And it's also an assumption, I think, that some people have, that prostitution is something that happens between two consenting adults. You know, there's a lot of like kind of political pressure saying like this is a victimless crime here. But the truth of the matter is very different from that. I mean, this is something that is necessarily exploitative.
Yeah. And I want us to continue to talk in weeks to come about the fact that if you believe that people were created in the image of God and thus they have intrinsic value, that changes the way you care about these issues, right? There's no such thing as a victimless crime. That's liberal rhetoric for you shouldn't care about this issue. But the truth is, we should care as much for the person who sells herself at 35 into sex trafficking, because she was created for more than that. Her destiny is greater than that. The same way we care about a 13-year-old who was ripped out of her schoolhouse in Nigeria and sold for $12. So we're going to talk about this issue a lot. You're going to read some about it on the blog. We're going to link you to on the My Big Jesus blog. Lots of resources. If you're interested in this issue, we encourage you to get involved, not just by giving money, but by giving your time and your interest and becoming an advocate in your community for the people who don't have a voice on this issue. And we're going to continue to talk about this in weeks to come, because I think it's a rising tide that's becoming an epidemic in this country. So guys, as we bring this segment to an end and we get ready to go in and interview a couple of our contributors this month, I've been thinking about the fact that I'm only an expert in really two things: Jesus and television.
I knew you were going to say
that. So in doing so, I thought we might end, as our listeners start to get to know us a little bit better, what is your favorite television show of all time? We'll start with you, Ryan. What's your
Breaking
favorite?
Breaking Bad, no question.
Breaking Bad. Why Breaking Bad? I love it too.
It's dark. It's definitely not for everybody, but it is just compelling human drama. You're just watching the spiraling descent of man. It's compelling. I can't explain it. It's horrible. It's dark, but it's compelling. I don't know.
So you watched all of those episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Bryan Cranston nominated for an Emmy this coming year.
He's fantastic. And although Gene, you're not a fan.
Boo.
Yeah, Gene doesn't like it.
Yeah, I've seen every episode of Breaking Bad myself. Great
show.
So
that you can say that you've seen, right?
So I've seen every one. I can't be one of those people that says that's a terrible book, having never read the book.
Let's be clear. Yeah. Television better than books.
Right.
Always.
Right.
Always. Yes.
But I just don't think he's a very good actor.
Really?
Well, yeah.
The Academy disagrees.
No, I know, but everybody disagrees with the Academy.
All the rich old white people at the Academy disagree with
right.
you.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
So Gene, you don't like Breaking Bad, but did you like Malcolm in the Middle? Did you like him as the dad?
Yeah, he's great in Malcolm in the Middle, but his acting style didn't change one bit from Malcolm in the Middle to Breaking Bad. I'm not joking. The delivery in Malcolm in the Middle is the same exact one from Walter White.
Bryan Cranston, loyal listener to the show.
That's right. Hello, Brian.
No. Literally, as I was saying that, I was like, what happens if Brian hears this?
Yeah. You're not getting a Christmas card.
He's never going to listen to Fearing the Sound again.
That's right. Brian, don't follow Gene on Twitter. Yeah. He's dogging your shows. Yeah. All right, Gene, favorite TV show of all time?
I'm going to go a little bit lighter. Favorite TV show of all time would be Scrubs.
Fantastic.
I love
it. Can you sing the theme song?
I love it. I could.
Give me a little bit.
Well, it comes in with a little bit of banjo. I'm not going to sing. Okay. Now I'm under pressure. Well, I sound like Britney on autotune.
He gets out the door takes
just in time. See that? No, it's a good song. But my wife and I, before you could binge watch things on Netflix, we would go and we started Scrubs pretty early on and we would buy a season. And so I think we started buying at like season 3 or 4. We would watch them. Literally, we didn't have cable or this is pre like in-home internet. And so we would just loop the DVDs. There was a button where you could just hit play all and we would loop the DVDs. And then when season 4 came out, we'd go buy it, watch 1 through 4, and then season 5 came out, bought season 5, 1 through 5, and that's just that was like the first 4 years of our marriage.
I think you're burying the lead there. You said this was before in-home internet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's back when
1984. Before all that Yahoo was out.
Yeah, I know.
Before you had it.
Before, yeah.
You poor Nazarene kid.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So my favorite show, Gene alluded to it earlier, is Friends. I love Friends. I could do with a little less pornography, addiction kind of jokes, but my wife and I did the same thing because you can play all on those discs. And when we were first married, we got married after in-home internet, but we would lay in bed at night, we put in a disc, and I mean, Ryan and I were talking earlier today that show was pretty much the worst thing ever created until season 4. But after season 4.
It was rough at the start.
But after season 4.
See, maybe
four,
that's why I just don't love it so much. Because I can't say I've seen every episode of Friends.
Mm.
But the first few, I mean, I think Chandler gets a new computer.
Oh, no, you got the first 3 seasons.
I think it had 256 meg of total memory. Not RAM, but like total memory.
And they were like, this thing's top of the
this
line.
This is top notch.
And he didn't know how to use it because of all that new in-home internet stuff.
Yeah, new in-home internet.
So, yeah, I don't know how it ever made it out of the first season, but it is a fantastic show towards the end.
Oh.
I guess it's just never going to be on Netflix.
No, Warner Brothers makes too much money, and Warner Brothers, Brothers runs all of the hottest parts of hell. So we're going to stop right there for today.
What happens when one of the brothers, Warner, listens to this
and wants to pick us up,
is never going to
go national with us.
The Warner Brothers have to get that in-home internet first. So we're going to stop right here. We're going to come back after the break, and we're going to be joined by Brandi Campbell. Brandi Campbell is the long-form writer for Compassion International. She just got back from a trip to Africa. If you haven't read her piece, go onto the blog, read it right now, and then pick back up the podcast. It's fantastic. Her story's great. And we'll come back together at the end and close out the show. But thanks for joining us, and we'll see you in a few minutes. Welcome back to the My Big Jesus podcast, where we talk about the way that Jesus collides with our faith and culture. I'm joined in studio today by Nathan Ely. Nathan wrote a piece recently for the blog called Rankings. Nathan, you're new to most of our readers and listeners, so why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Nathan Ely. I have a wife named Laura. We have 2 little girls. Evelyn is almost 3, and Charlie Kate is almost 10 months. And I'm a generosity strategist, so I help churches in any area of giving and generosity, whether it's just with their normal budget, whether it's capital campaigns, legacy giving. So my life, especially my career, revolves around giving.
And more importantly to our conversation today, tell everyone where you went to college.
I'm a 2002 graduate of Auburn University.
Auburn in the SEC.
That's right.
Are you a football fan?
A little bit of a football fan. In fact, my first career out of college was in sports radio. So my first job was with the Auburn Network doing, soccer and softball and baseball and all those sports for Auburn. So it's very close to my heart.
Did you get to cover any revenue sports while you were doing that?
I was in the studio running the board, doing the kind of things you're doing right now for Auburn football. So if that counts, I mean, I got a championship ring for it. So
really?
It counts for something.
Really? Was that Cam Newton's?
No, that was back Jason Campbell's year.
Jason Campbell.
That's right.
Wasn't he the quarterback of a bad Redskins team for
he
a while?
Was.
See, growing up around
in a bad here. Raiders team and a bad a lot of teams.
Growing up in North Carolina, we didn't have the Panthers when I was growing up, so mm-hmm. we had bad Redskins fans. We had a season that was pretty good. Well, good. So you love SEC football. I met your wife at Auburn. And so your first piece actually kind of deals with the two passions of your life then, football and money. Tell us about that.
And hopefully one of my passions in my life isn't money, but it has a tendency to be, I suppose. Yeah, Auburn football is special to us. And in fact, it probably in my life was too important at some times. I would get too excited about some wins, too down about some losses. And so it got to the top of my priority list. And I think through my spiritual maturity, it's fallen down the list a little bit. But as a fan, especially in the BCS era, we always needed our team to be in the top two to make it to the championship game at the end of the season. And often for Auburn, we were 3 or 4 or 5 and, man, needed one of those top 2 or 3 teams to lose so we could jump up and be in the championship game. And since I think about giving all the time, I can compare anything to giving. And I started thinking about the rankings and the fact that for many of us, and we know how much Jesus talked about money, for many of us, money gets in those top two places. And it takes the place of where Jesus should be in our lives. And so how do we take money and move it down the list so we open up that spot for Jesus? And the way, my answer at least in this blog, is through giving, through taking the power of money away in our lives through giving.
Well, you know, one of the reasons we had you here is because, you know, my paying job is as a pastor and, you know, trying to shepherd people in their lives. I've noticed that there are really only two reasons people's marriages don't work. One of those is money. Mm-hmm. The other is sex. Mm-hmm. We'll only be talking about one of those on the Might Be Jesus podcast. But, you know, money matters, and it matters because it matters to God. Yep. And so as you've worked with churches, what you're really doing is you're working with individuals, mm-hmm. and you're helping them figure out how to manage their resources. So what are some of the principles that you encourage people to have? Because we know that churches and teachers and preachers all have different philosophies. Some teach a 10% tithe. Mm-hmm. Some teach just be generous. You know, how do you help people get those things in balance?
Yeah, you're right. There are a lot of different understandings of what we should give and how we should give. And people can argue Old Testament, New Testament, all that good stuff. But I think one biblical principle that stays concrete throughout the Bible is the concept of first fruits, and that the first part of everything that we earn, we think we earn, that God blesses us with, goes back to God in some way or another. I think that's critical, again, to take the power away from money, to give away that first part, to save the second part. That's not necessarily biblical. Maybe that's my interpretation a little bit, but to give away the first part, to save the second part, and then spend the rest. Man, God lets us live on a lot of money. If we can just give up that first part and show that He's in control, I think He blesses the rest of the area of our finances.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we really believe in around my household is the principle of sowing and reaping. Mm-hmm. So let's not have an argument about the tithe. Let's have an argument about that God set up the world with the principle of sowing and reaping. Mm-hmm. And so God's not a liar. So because of that, if you sow, you will reap. And that's not really just about money. That's just the principle that the universe is set up on.
Yes.
And so one of the reasons we're going to talk about money and the way that Jesus and what we believe about Jesus collides with it is it's an issue of stewarding not just money, but everything God's entrusted mm-hmm. us with. So, well, we're glad you're here. Your first piece is really good, and we're excited about sharing it with the world. Before you go today, it's very important that we end our time with you talking about a prediction. We're about 3 weeks out from opening day for SEC football.
That's right.
So give us a sense of how you think Auburn's going to finish.
Well, and all my friends would say I'm a realist, so I don't overestimate and hopefully don't underestimate. I read this week that no SEC team has repeated as champions of the SEC since 1998 when Tennessee did it. So the odds are not in our favor for that. I think we can get to 10 wins, tough road schedule this year. So I'm going to say 10 wins for Auburn this year. Good bowl game, and I'll be pretty happy with that.
Who's the first game against?
First game's against Arkansas at home.
Arkansas, the state that named themselves not Kansas.
That's
so
right.
So we should be in pretty good shape. We live in the same town here, so do you have any affinity for Wake Forest University?
Yeah, I mean, I like them.
What's your prediction for them? Over, under 3 wins?
I haven't seen their schedule. Since I want to be liked by all the fans around here, I'm going to say over. Absolutely.
Over 3 wins. I did hear Dave Clawson on a podcast the other day, and he sounds serious, which is encouraging to me. I need somebody to take football seriously. Anyway, first. Well, we are glad to have you in studio with us today. Come back anytime you want to. Nathan will be with us in another month talking about his piece, and he'll be joining us in studio as a co-host because he knows how to talk on radio, and that's important to us. If you haven't read his piece, go to MyBigJesus.com. Look for his piece. It's called Rankings. We'll be sharing it on Twitter and Facebook, and you can read it on the feature page and share it with a friend. We'll be back in just a moment with Brandi Campbell.
Glad to be joined here by Brandi Campbell. Brandi is a contributor to the My Big Jesus blog, where she talks about Jesus and justice, and she's the long-form writer for Compassion International and an alumni of the prestigious Bluefield College, where Brandi and I met a very long time ago. What year did you start at Bluefield?
98.
So you graduated in 2002, then, a year after me.
I did. Yep, I did.
Well, it will make you feel great that most of the bloggers on the My Big Jesus blog are much younger than us. So, Brandi wrote a great piece this month called How Enviable is Poverty? Where did this idea come from, Brandi?
You know, I did my first international trip at Bluefield when I was in my undergrad, and I would have people say to me when I would come home, like, I really envy how, you know, people who live in poverty have so much, they have to have so much dependence on God. And I mean, literally, they would tell me they envied people in poverty. And I wouldn't say that I totally disagreed with it in those first couple of trips I did, but you know, the more you go on trips and see real poverty and not just that tourism version of poverty or the zoo version of poverty, I think you just learn that there's actually nothing enviable about poverty, and it's a really simplified view of what poverty is when people say that they envy it.
What trip did you take in college?
I did Brazil when I was in college, Brazil twice, actually. And then we did Poland before that. But Brazil was my first developing country third world trip.
Because I think I was actually on the trip to Poland with you, where it was really a spectator sport. Right? We just watched people be poor.
It was really bad.
So you just got back from what? Where did you just get back from?
India.
And so anything great happened there?
It was actually my first time in Asia, and I love visiting new countries, but when you get to visit like a brand new country and a brand new continent, like there's just something very special about that. And the people were amazing. I had a lot of curry, but yeah, you know, it's just, for me, there's really interesting cultural things. The food's interesting. The clothes are interesting. But for me, it's all about just meeting people and the people that let me into their lives and share, you know, these really intimate moments. And because I have to ask tough questions because I'm trying to bring those experiences back to my readers here in the States. And it's not always easy to kind of dig deep into their lives, but they let me in, and I take that as a privilege. So, yeah, it was an amazing trip.
So on the trip that you wrote about in your blog piece, it was to Ethiopia, and yeah. I was really struck. I've actually shared a couple times about an encounter you had with a young mother there. Tell our listeners a little bit about that encounter.
You know, it's what's interesting is it's not the only time it's happened, but I've had moms in several countries want me to bring their children home with me, I don't tell that story lightly because they're not asking me lightly either. It's not a flippant thing, but there's just that perception of, she's from the United States and she's white and she, you know, she has clothes and she's well fed and she can take better care of my children than I can. And it's not because they don't want their kids. I think that's the reason I don't tell that story lightly. It's not that they don't want to take care of their kids, but they want more for their kids. And there's that perception of some woman from a developed country can do that for them. And so I have had in a couple of instances, people asked me to take their children. And I think the first time that happened though was in Ethiopia. And It's kind of one of those moments where it just kind of breaks you a bit and lets you see a glimpse of that desperation that you don't often see.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we're talking about on the My Big Jesus blog and the podcast is how Jesus collides with our faith and culture. And all over the news right now is this issue of immigration. And I don't hear enough people in the church speaking up and saying, listen, these are not just numbers that are crossing over. These are kids created in the image of our God and parents who are, and they've created a utopia out of our country where they can just get here, they can survive.
Right.
So, well, you're going to be talking a lot about Jesus and justice on our blog. Why do you think Jesus cares about justice issues in the world?
I think all you have to do is read scripture and read the Bible to see that he cares for the downtrodden. He cares for the widows and the orphans, and he cares for those people who are, you know, the untouchables and the people that aren't. It's not, going into poverty is not a pleasant experience. Like, the smells aren't pleasant and the sights are not pleasant. And I think that there's, but when I see Jesus go into those places where he wasn't supposed to go and where, you know, it's not something that's enjoyable, but like, he's all about serving and helping people, and who needs serving and helping more than the poor, than those people living in poverty without that safety net of money or of, government assistance like we have in the States. And I mean, I can't think of a better way to serve in the way that God demonstrated than Jesus demonstrated than to serving those people living in poverty.
Well, that's so great. Not to turn to a lighter issue, but Randy, I've known you for a long time, and I know that you also blog in a couple places, but one of the things you blog about is baking.
Yes.
Tell us about why you love baking. What is it about makes you excited about baking?
Well, I think that, I mean, it tastes good, first of all, but there's something very cathartic to me about baking. Baking's a very inexact science, so you have to have, I use my kitchen scale and everything is like to the gram, and there's something very cathartic to me about putting all that stuff together that doesn't seem like it's going to work together, and then it does. And I don't know, like, I do it when I'm stressed and I do it to share with people, because who doesn't like someone who bakes?
So it's really to make friends. That's why you bake.
Totally. It's cathartic. And then there's that hospitality element. Like, I think hospitality is definitely one of my gifts. And so I love having fresh baked cookies when someone comes to my house, and my coworkers love it because I bring stuff into them.
Well, that's so great. Where can they read more about your baking adventures?
Yeah, well, BrandyCampbell.com is just like my primary blog, and there's a link on there to my cooking blog.
Cooking blog. So go there and learn how to make Brandy's chocolate chip cookies. This will be worth your time. Her piece this month is called How Enviable Is Poverty? It's on the My Big Jesus blog. You can go there, read it, share it, read it again. It is one of the best pieces on the blog this month, and so you will love it. You can follow Brandy on Twitter at BNCampbell. That's CAMPBELL. She's not that great on Twitter, but she's getting better, I'm believing. So go on there. She's a great follower. She's a great read. She's one of my favorite writers on the blog. So make sure you check it out. And Brandy, we'll have you back again next time you write something.
Sounds great. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks so much for being here. Welcome back to the My Big Jesus podcast. I'm proud to be joined in studio today by Alan Wright. He's a author, pastor, and teacher, author of many books. He is joining us to continue our conversation today about the ways in which what we believe about Jesus collides with our faith and culture. And he's here today to talk about his first book. Alan, what was your first book?
It's called Childlike Heart.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that book?
Well, I always, love little kids. Even before I had kids, man, I just love little kids. And I thought a lot about Jesus's words that unless you become like a little child, you'll never enter the kingdom. And it just began to kind of dawn on me that while Jesus was talking about the giant kind of childlike faith that brings us into the kingdom, that when he says become like a little child, it must mean two things. One, it must be possible, or else he wouldn't tell us to do so. And secondly, I began to realize, I think he's talking about all kinds of things like a little child. You know, the disciples said, who's the greatest? He really didn't rebuke them for asking. He's almost like saying, that's a good question. I'll tell you who's the greatest. And he gets a little toddler. And so I began to think about the freedom, the wonder, how quick they are to be in tears, and yet how quickly mended their hearts can be, how quick really to forgive and move on. And everything about a little toddler's life, how it is a picture of the fullness of the kingdom. And so that's what it's about. Every chapter about a different attribute of a little toddler, a childlike heart, and how knowing Jesus changes everything for us.
Well, we certainly want all of our readers and listeners to go purchase this book, but maybe you could share one of your favorite stories from the book with our listeners.
Oh, I tell you, can I do two?
Sure, absolutely.
Quick. I'll make it quick. All right. I'm mowing the lawn many years ago, and I've got my nephew. We're babysitting, and he's a toddler at the time. And I'm out on a hot summer day, and I am mowing the lawn. You know, the yellow jackets nipping at your ankles, the sweat running down the brow on a humid North Carolina summer day. I'm mowing the lawn. And I look over there. There's my little nephew, Jake. And he said, and he's waving at me. I turn the lawnmower off. I go over there. I say, what is it, Jake? He said, can I help you mow the lawn? I said, no, it's a big dangerous machine. No, you can't. You can't help me mow the lawn. You just stay over there. I go back to mowing the lawn. I look back over, and he's just waving his arms and screaming. I look over, little fella, just crying his eyes out. And I just look back, and I said, Jake, what's wrong? He said, I just want to help you mow the lawn, Uncle Alan. I just want to help you mow the lawn. And it was that day I realized, what is wrong with this picture? I said, this little toddler is just longing to do the chores that I hate to do. And so much of life is like that. You know, like the children are out there play acting, being firemen and policemen and nurses and the things that we then get into our life and feel like work is a drudgery. Wonder if there's something, that childlike quality that come into our attitude towards work. Something was lost at the fall, right? There was work before the fall. Adam and Eve had work to tend to the garden and all. What changed was their attitude towards it and how they felt towards it. I think there's a picture there. Let me tell you another great and sweet story I'll never ever forget. I went many years ago to visit a very, very sick parishioner. He had leukemia. He was nearing the end of his life. And this aged man was lying in bed in so much pain that he said, the way he would moan characteristically was he'd go, oh me, oh me. He was just in so much pain. And his grown son came in the room and stood next to him. And this aged man in the hospital bed, Lester was his name, and he said, oh me. And his son bent down and did what I thought was the unthinkable. He bent down and leaned into the ear of his dying father, and he said, oh me. And I thought, what is this? Is a grown son mocking his father's dying moan? And afterwards, we stepped in the hallway, and he told me what it was all about. Evidently, Lester had a toddler grandson that when he would be over at Lester's house before Lester had been hospitalized, and Lester would make his little moves through the house on his walker with each step in pain because he think he had cancer in his bones. And Lester would take a step, he'd move his walker and go, oh me. And little Wesley, little two-year-old Wesley, would put his hand on the base of the walker and try to help, and he would echo back, oh me, and Lester would go, oh me, and little Wesley would go, oh me. And so it was that Wesley's dad was in the room comforting his dying father by reminding him of the empathy that a toddler had. How easily toddlers can come into feeling what someone else is feeling, and yet they don't wind up with all the codependency issues that
That's
we do.
Right.
And so, you know, just two stories, but everything really about being a little child is something about the heart of the abundant life that's in Jesus.
And Alan, I've known you for a long time, and now you have a college student and a high school student, but you've invested much of your life into raising these two great children and really protecting that freedom that is their childhood, and keeping that innocence and keeping that excitement about what God's doing in their life, which really for me gets me excited about the next project that you're working on right now.
Well, I'm working on, you know, I'm just so taken by the absolute power of the gospel when it's pure, not grace plus a little bit of law, but just the pure grace that is the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ at work. And what I'm working on now is a new written effort about how that gospel of grace informs everything we do in parenting. What happens if we raise our kids in what I would call a palace of grace? Right? An atmosphere of no shame. And so I've written a lot about the gospel's power to heal shame, and now I want to write how this can be helpful to the parent in developing a shame-free home. It's really about high expectation, but low pressure, because it's grace that's informing an identity within a child of a destiny, rather than law that is hovering over a child with the prospect of failing. And it's all the difference in the world. It's the difference in gospel versus law. So that's what I'm working on now.
Well, I'm excited to read it when it comes out. Once again, Alan is a writer, a pastor, and a teacher. He runs a ministry called Sharing the Light. There you can go and find all of his books, including the one we talked about today. You can also sign up for a daily devotion that Pastor Alan puts out, goes out to several thousand around the country. Once again, you can go to sharingthelight.org and check out all that he's doing. Thanks so much for joining us in studio today.
My pleasure, Chris.
Well, when we come back, we'll wrap up today's podcast and ask ourselves what we learned.
Heard from pastor, author, teacher Alan Wright. You can get all of his content on sharingthelight.org. Guys, what did we learn today?
I'll go first. I learned today that Gene Francis, the lead singer of Fury and the Sound, did not have in-house internet in 2006.
I did not. Wi-Fi was a thing of the wealthy.
I may have misinterpreted, but I seem to think that he wasn't aware that there aren't still dinosaurs on the planet,
right,
as well.
I learned today that dinosaurs are made out of resin.
No, I told you, dinosaurs are made out of Jesus dust.
Jesus dust and resin. It's a composite.
And Ryan, what did you learn today?
I thought I already said that.
Is that what you learned today? Was that Gene?
Jesus, there were some dinosaurs walking the planet.
Oh.
All right. So, guys, thank you so much for joining us for our first podcast.
Yeah,
you can download it on mybigjesus.com or by going to iTunes or the iTunes store. If you'd like to send us something that you'd like us to talk about or have a question, contact us at chris@mybigjesus.com, or you can call 411 and ask for Ryan Corbello. I don't think anybody knows what 411 is anymore. Call 411, ask for Ryan Corbello, and they will help you out. Until next time, we're here at mybigjesus.com and the podcast reminding you that your Jesus is too small.